Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Do you remember KTEL? If you watch TV, any TV, in the 70s or 80s, KTEL's ads were impossible to avoid. Like this one from 1976.
KTEL presents Blockbuster, a great new LP, 20 original hits, original stars, KC and the Sunshine Band. Silver Convention. War. Blockbuster, 20 original hits, original stars. Be sure to get the best from KTEL. LP $5.99, tape $6.99.
Now, if you're old enough to remember KTEL, you probably think there's nothing like that today. After all, we don't see TV ads like that anymore. And we're told that no one buys CDs anymore either. Everything's downloaded or streamed these days. Well, not so fast. A British series called Now That's What I Call Music moved into the States and took over this pop hit compilation territory back in 1998. And since then, every single volume they've released has hit the Billboard Top 10. Their current edition, Volume 50, is expected to top the chart. Even more remarkable, 80% of the Now series sales are physical CDs. We'll find out how they've managed to buck the industry trend, and we'll hear some of the hits and some of the misses from Now That's What I Call Music. Actually, this is what I call music, the duo Y Oak, known for their slashing guitars and pounding drums. Well, they have a new sound, a dramatically different one on their new album, and they're here to play for us live on Soundcheck today. And we'll start with a song called The Logic of Color from the band Y Oak.
And the truth within the eye, and the whole of it is
That's the band Why Oak. The song is Logic of Color. You'll find it on their new album Shriek, but we'll get a chance to hear more live music from them and talk a bit with them coming up later on the show. Back in 1998, television audiences started to see commercials for a brand new product. It was a compilation album, but it wasn't the usual greatest hits of the 70s or swinging sounds of the Rat Pack. It was an album that sold the hits of now.
The hits keep on coming. This is Now 2. Hot tracks from New Radicals, Spice Girls, Sheryl Crow, Jay-Z, and Robbie Williams.
Last week, the Now That's What I Call Music series hit another milestone when it released its 50th album of pop hits. And joining me today to talk about it is Jeff Mosco, head of A&R for the series. Jeff, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John. Great to be with you.
So some people might be surprised to hear that this series, Now That's What I Call Music, is still around, that it hasn't gone the way of those old KTEL compilations from the 80s. What is it that's enabled you to survive?
It's important that we constantly reflect the marketplace. We want to be a snapshot of the musical landscape at any given moment. And we want our fans to be able to, at any point in time, grab our music either off the shelf or come back to it on a download and experience music from a particular moment in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've tried to do over the years and what we think we've done successfully is simply track the biggest popular music at any given moment and reflect that back to the consumer.
So your job is to select the songs that makes each edition of Now That's What I Call Music, right?
That's right, yes.
Now, I'm doing the math here. This is your 17th year. You've just released album number 50. So that's,
yes.
So you're averaging about three a year over the course
yes.
of that time.
Mm-hmm.
How many are you doing this year?
We do, not counting supplemental releases, meaning other genres like country, which mm-hmm. we do mm-hmm. special releases on, or Christmas, we do now four releases a year. In the past, we've done two or three, but within the last few years, we've gone to four releases a year.
For example, the current, the 50th edition of Now That's What I Call Music has Pharrell's huge hit song, Happy.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you
But the previous edition, number 49, probably could have had Happy on it as well. Have you ever repeated a song from one edition?
Well, no, we've never repeated a song. But what we're trying to do is really capture the song when it has its largest audience.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes songs, you know, we have to close the album out about a month and a half or so prior to its release. So sometimes a song will be released in the market, but it would not have achieved its maximum momentum at the time that we have to close the track listing. So, sure, yeah, it could have been on 49, but it's a better fit on 50.
Right.
And that's partly my judgment to make that call.
So you have to do a bit of, prognostication here, you know, looking ahead and thinking, is this going to be a big hit?
Yes. And sometimes that's really easy to see, like in the case of Happy or in the case of Dark Horse.
The Katy Perry song.
Yes, correct. But in other instances, you know, you have to see the trajectory of a song, and that's beyond just airplay. You know, it used
right.
to be back in the earlier days of Now that it was solely based on sales and airplay. But there's also a social trajectory. Things that are happening as far as social network traction or video views that go into a decision. A couple of examples on 50, if I may,
yeah.
of exactly that happening. Selfie by the Chainsmokers, which is sort of a cultural moment, if you will.
It's not even summer. Why does the DJ keep on playing Summertime Sadness? After you get out of the bathroom, can we go smoke a cigarette? I really need one. But first, let me take a selfie.
That song had begun to get some significant sales and had begun to get some video airplay, but by no means had it gone viral in any way when we started tracking it. I had a sense, along with communicating with the record label, that this song was going to have some longevity and gain some virality, so I kept watching it, and we requested it, and we put it on the record in the thought that it would be bigger when we released the album, and indeed that's the case. Another example is La 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 by Naughty Boy featuring Sam Smith, which was a song that globally had literally hundreds of millions of video views, but had just started to be released here. And again, we sort of sensed that it was going to be big. We sensed that the label was going to work it at radio and that it would catch on in the States, and that's exactly what happened.
That's some music from the 50th edition of the compilation series called Now That's What I Call Music. Jeff Mosco with us on Soundcheck is the head of A&R for the Now series. His job is to pick the songs and sequence them, and I want to ask you, Jeff, about the sequencing in a moment, but Selfie from Chainsmokers, La La La, Naughty Boy, two that may not have been as big when you put this together as they are now. So, again, as you said before, you need to kind of anticipate what's going to happen in the marketplace. It sounds like, given the fragmentation of the marketplace, the fact that there's so much more social media out there, that your job has gotten perhaps exponentially harder than it was when you started.
Oh, there's absolutely no question. And part of the issue is that songs happen faster, and you can, as I said earlier, you can close the record, and then a month later, month and a half later, when the record's out, there's a handful of other new songs that have already become popular. But again, my job is a combination of the songs that have established themselves as massive hits, and there are a significant number of those on each of our records, as well as songs that we're not necessarily exposing as new songs per se to our audience, but we are exposing in the early to mid point in their life cycle.
The upward part of their trajectory, in other words.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the interesting thing about our fan base, and we do a lot of research about our fans and about our brand, is that contrary to popular belief, our fans are actually very musically engaged. The perception is that our fans are very casual, but in reality, they're very musically engaged. They want to sample new music. They want to live with a snapshot of the moment. And quite frankly, there's this perception that the CD, for example, and we are overwhelmingly a physical brand. We're about 80%-ish physical. There's a perception that this physical brand is absolutely dead in the marketplace, and that couldn't be, as you can see, that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, our fans like to be very mobile with their music, and quite honestly, you know, there's a lot of people in America that like to take a CD, put it in the CD player in their car, and most of their cars still have CD players overwhelmingly, and listen to a sequenced playlist that's been curated for them with clean versions of the songs with their family on a road trip. There's a lot of kids that like to, you know, put in a CD when their friends are over and jump around and dance on their beds. This is just human nature, and it's a lifestyle brand, and it's a brand that the kids have grown up with, and in some cases that their parents have grown up with.
So are there regional differences? Is the brand stronger, you know, in the middle of the country or on the coasts, or do you not have that?
I don't have that off the tip of my tongue. Our marketing folks would have that, but it is really strong everywhere. I mean, it does sell across the U.S. and everywhere. Honestly.
And I should say that every single edition of Now That's What I Call Music has hit the Billboard Top 10. We're expecting that this one, the 50th, will probably be next week's number one album on the Billboard charts. And we're speaking with Jeff Mosco, who's the head of A&R for the Now series. So you mentioned before this idea of the audience wanting to, you know, they're musically engaged. They don't just want the big, obvious hits of the day. They want to see what's coming next as well. And that gets us to the sequencing. So each Now album includes some of these kind of up-and-coming artists, right?
Yes, and there's a feature that we added around Now 31, 32, called What's Next. Mm-hmm. And our sense was we have a responsibility to our artists and our songwriters and our industry and our fans to give them an early look at some new songs that are coming out and new artists so that they get a first look at what perhaps is the next big hit.
And on Now That's What I Call Music 50, the one that is just out now, one of those What's Next tracks is this one called Youth by the band Foxes.
There are many among us.
That's one of the up-and-coming artists that's part of the What's Next part of the Now series. Now That's What I Call Music, a compilation of big pop hits, as Jeff Mosco is telling us, kind of a musical snapshot several times a year of the pop music landscape. You've just done the 50th edition. What does it tell us about pop music today and perhaps how it's changed?
Well, you know, I think some of the most obvious changes, there is a substantial footprint of country music in popular culture. There is a substantial footprint of electronic dance music in popular culture. Earlier in the life cycle of Now, you had a lot of teen pop, which of course again started making its play with One Direction and some of the other groups that are really starting to gain momentum now as well. So we've seen that. We saw the beginning of the overwhelming crossover of hip hop throughout the Now era. Mm-hmm. But getting back to country and EDM, you know, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of consumers who will experience a country show on a Friday night. You know, they'll go to see, say, Florida Georgia Line on a Friday night, and on a Saturday they'll go to an EDM festival. You know, so our job is to take those genres that are really moving into popular culture and reflect them onto Now. So we're thrilled, we're proud to have artists like Luke Bryan or Florida Georgia Line or Eric Church or any of these type country artists on our brand, and they're very enthusiastic about being part of it. By the same argument, there's a lot of EDM artists who've had pop success, Avicii, Zedd. These artists are, again, thrilled to be part of Now.
Now That's What I Call Music is now 50 editions old, started here in the States in 1998. Number 50, Volume 50 is out now, and Jeff Mosco is head of A&R for the Now series. He's been on the line with us, and Jeff, thanks very much for sharing some of the history with us on Soundcheck.
It's my pleasure, John. Thank you.
Up next, a different side of the pop compilation series, Now That's What I Call Music. We'll hear some hidden gems that were great, but for whatever reason didn't end up topping the charts.
Voices are singing. Moonlight and rapture.
Next month, you can watch Soundcheck in person as we record an upcoming episode of the show live on stage at BAM. It's part of the series called Radio Love Fest, and our guests will include Hamilton Lighthouser of the Walkmen, playing songs from his new solo album, Black Hours, and we'll have the orchestral indie rock of the band San Fermin. Join me for Soundcheck June 7th at BAM's Harvey Theater. For tickets, go to bam.org/radiolovefest. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we've been talking about the success of the Now That's What I Call Music series, which has been pumping out pop song compilations in this country since 1998, including songs like this one, Team by Lorde. Now, the question is, are you going to remember these songs in 10 years? I mean, yes, they're all hits, but some have already been swallowed up by the dustbin of history. Writer Jason Lipschutz listened through all of the Now discs and dug up 50 forgotten gems from the Now series for Billboard.com. You can find a link to that at soundcheck.org. And Jason joins me to suggest a couple that we should listen to right now. Hi, Jason.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us on Soundcheck today. Do you have a soft spot for these compilations?
I do. I actually bought the first Now That's What I Call Music way back in the day. I was a kid then, and I've always loved pop music, and I like the idea of gathering a bunch of these radio hits into compilations. And like you said, some of them are much more memorable than others because, you know, they put them out every 4 months or so. So you're going to have the huge radio smashes that endure over time. But you're also going to have like 5 or 6 songs on each one that are like, oh, yeah, I forgot that song existed. So it's just sort of the nature of these things.
And in retrospect, what do you find more interesting, the radio anthems that everyone knows or the sort of...
Oh, the forgotten gems, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, these are songs that, you know, people deemed hit-worthy enough to involve on a Now That's What I Call Music compilation. They were, you know, supposed to be big hits, but they weren't as memorable as the classic songs that we know from, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, mm-hmm. mid-2000s.
All right, well, let's take one from Volume 28, which came out in June of 2008, by a group called Metro Station. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so Metro Station in 2008, they had a minor moment. Metro Station is an electropop collective that consisted of Trace Cyrus, who is Miley Cyrus's half-brother. And they had a legitimate radio hit with Shake It. They had their moment in the sun. It did its thing on radio, but then that was the peak of the band.
Volume 28 of Now That's What I Call Music includes Shake It by Metro Station. The song is called Shake It from the band Metro Station, as Jason Lipschutz told us, a band that included Miley Cyrus's half-brother Trace, and which vanished without a trace just a couple of years later.
Absolutely. Listening to it now, it actually sounds like a song that One Direction would make maybe 2014. Yeah, they just weren't long for this world, but I still love that song. I still think it's a fun song.
Jason Lipschutz is associate editor at Billboard.com and editor of their Pop Shop blog. Check out our website, soundcheck.org, for his 50 forgotten gems from the Now series. You said you bought the very first edition.
I did.
The very first American edition of Now That's What I Call Music. What was the attraction to you? Why did you want that?
That's a good question. I think it was a mix of songs that I knew and songs that I didn't know. what was interesting about the early Now compilations is that they leaned a lot more in the alternative direction than they do now. It's hard to believe that a song from Radiohead's OK Computer was on the first Now That's What I Call Music, but Karma Police was like track number 15 on there.
But that was a radio hit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But they've expanded so much from those early days. Now they have little compartments of rock and country and R&B and hip hop, and as well as spin-offs of Now That's What I Call Christmas, Now That's What I Call the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It has something for everybody. And as someone who loved Top 40 radio growing up, I mean, it was just a perfect kind of $12 gift for me.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. When you're a kid, you don't have the money to buy all of the songs
exactly.
You want. So if someone gives you one package where you can get the hits and only the hits, you know, that is a very kind of appealing thing.
Yeah, and this is before iTunes. This is before even Napster.
Right.
You know, right. 1998 was right on that time of the teen pop explosion. So you had songs by the Backstreet Boys on NSYNC on the early editions. Now you have Justin Timberlake. Now you have One Direction on the new ones.
So are these compilations representative of their time periods?
I think so. I think that what my article did was explore the misses, but there's a way more hits. I mean, if you look at a Now That's What I Call Music from any time in the past 10 years, there's going to be about 10 songs that you know immediately. I'm interested in the other five songs that aren't quite as well known. They just didn't kind of stick into that time period, but are
well,
still worth
then
discovering.
I guess the question is, I mean, when we listen to this next artist, Orianthe.
Yes.
Who is an Australian guitarist, and she was supposed to be like the next big thing in terms of guitar shredding and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. What's interesting about Orianthe is that she was actually the guitarist, the lead guitarist on Michael Jackson's This Is It tour. But she definitely had a moment in 2010 with this song, According to You. It was a top 20 hit. It sounds a lot like a Kelly Clarkson song. It has that kind of attitude. But again, she's kind of faded away because she never really followed it up. She has put out an album since then, but I don't believe it was released in the U.S.
So she's here because at the moment they were putting together volume 33 of That's Now That's What I Call Music, she happened to be on the charts.
Exactly, yeah. And that's one of those cases where, like I said, it wasn't a number one hit, but it was in the top 20. So I can imagine when they were gathering songs for Now That's What I Call Music 33, they said, hey, this isn't one of the 10 biggest hits that are going to be on this album, but it's one of the 15 biggest hits that are going to be on this album.
And 4 years later, we can perhaps take issue with that statement. But
maybe a little bit.
Let's hear the song. Orianthe's According to You.
You can't do anything right.
That is Australia's Orianthe Panagaris, of Greek extraction, just goes by her first name, Orianthe, and a song called According to You. And Jason, there's something in the pop music world we don't get a chance to hear all that often anymore. Guitar solo!
Yes. Yeah, that was her thing. She was the shredder. And Orianthe, I mean, she hasn't really followed that up, like I said, in terms of U.S. top 40 radio, but she's been doing great. She toured a lot with Alice Cooper. Like I said, she released an album internationally, so she's still doing her thing. She's an incredible, incredible live performer, and she had that one tiny moment of pop relevance and landed her on Now 33.
So we're talking about some of the forgotten gems from the Now series. Now That's What I Call Music. Now 50 compilations in. And since you said a moment ago, Jason, that they are kind of representative of their individual time period, we can kind of map trends in pop music by going back and looking at how the series has changed over the years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest ones that I saw when I was researching this piece was the mid-2000s. There are so many representatives of the Houston rap scene. I don't know if you remember like the Lil Jon explosion, but even, you know, subsets from that, you have artists like Huey and Mims and Dem Franchise Boys, and they had such hits at the time because that was the trend, especially in hip hop, and it crossed over to pop. But it's almost been like entombed. Like there's nothing like that anymore on the new Now series, and that's just because that's not what is on pop radio these days.
We're speaking with Jason Lipschutz. He's associate editor at Billboard.com and edits their Pop Shop blog. And he listened to all 50 compilations in the Now That's What I Call Music series and wrote about 50 forgotten gems, including this next one from Hanson. Now, Hanson, you know, Mbop, big global hit. So this is not a name that people have forgotten, but this song maybe.
Yeah, so this song is on Now 4. It's called This Time Around. It's on the next to last song on Now 4. I don't know how I remember that, but it is true. And, you know, like you said, Hanson had just this huge explosive moment in pop music in the mid-90s with their album Middle of Nowhere, especially the song Mbop. That's the one everyone remembers. But Where's the Love? Even their Christmas album did really well. In 2000... they came back a couple of years after Middle of Nowhere. They came back with this album This Time Around. Its title track was the lead single, and it was definitely more mature. It just it never caught on like Mbop did. And This Time Around was almost like the moment where it's like, oh, they're not going to be able to sustain this popularity.
Yeah. Then how'd they get onto the compilation?
Because that's the thing with these Now That's What I Call Music compilations that I'm so interested in is that, you know, you can pinpoint the mega hits and you have to include them, but then you always have those songs that are always on the cusp. Like maybe there was probably a lot of general interest around Hanson's next single when This Time Around came out, but it just never really kind of found that audience.
Let's hear the song This Time Around from Now That's What I Call Music Volume 4 from 2000 and the band Hanson. With This Time Around, which appears on Volume 4 of Now That's What I Call Music, came out in July of 2000. Jason Lipschutz of Billboard.com has listened to all 50 volumes. How did you do that? How long did that take you?
Oh, it took a good amount of time. A lot of the songs I already knew, but it was more the songs in the back half of each one that I had to listen to again and say, oh, is this an actually forgotten gem or just a forgotten song?
So did you just have all I mean, once you bought Volume 1, were you a regular consumer of the series?
No, I bought up until maybe 8 or 9, but I always kind of kept an eye on it. I always have a soft spot for the Now That's What I Call Music series because, you know, people still are enthusiastic about them. Less people now that iTunes is a thing, now that people can stream songs on Spotify, but hey, people still buy them.
And every time one of them comes out, it makes the top 5, it seems, in the
Billboard
charts.
I believe that the first 49 in the regular series have all been in the top 10 of the Billboard 200. So they all, from the beginning, they've never not done well, I guess.
Yeah. And as a kind of time capsule, it must be sort of interesting to pull out one from the middle of 2000 and suddenly you're back, you know, 14 years ago.
Exactly. And that's what the fun was in doing this, was not only revisiting the hits from 2000, 2005, 2010, but also those songs that just never really quite stuck around and people forgot about.
Well, and even more interesting, we have an occasional series that we do fairly regularly on Soundcheck called That Was a Hit, where
yes.
we look at songs and think, really? That yep. got to the top of the chart. How did that happen? I mean, this series would seem to be a gold mine
exactly.
of that sort of thing.
No, that is completely correct.
So tell me about Rumors by Lindsay Lohan, our final forgotten gem for today.
Yeah, so Rumors came out at a time when Lindsay Lohan, you know, she kind of did the inverse of the Britney Spears. Britney Spears she was a huge pop star and then tried to cross over to movies with Crossroads. It completely flamed out. Lindsay Lohan did the inverse. She was a huge movie star, and Rumors came out, I believe, around 2004, 2005. It was on the 2005 Now compilation. But that was at the time of Mean Girls, a little after Freaky Friday. There was still a huge amount of interest around Lindsay Lohan as a personality. And she tried to kickstart a pop career. And I'm so fascinated by the track listing of each Now album, because they try to jam the big hits up front.
Right.
And Rumors was actually like track number 3 on its Now album, because people were so sure, okay, Lindsay Lohan's a huge personality. She's going to have a pop smash. And it just never happened. Rumors, her single, which was kind of an anti-paparazzi manifesto, it never even charted on the Hot 100, and yet it's, you know, surrounded by songs like U2's Vertigo and Gwen Stefani's What You Waiting For on its Now That's What I Call Music compilation.
So all the big top hits of early
exactly.
2005, and this song.
And then Rumors by Lindsay Lohan.
We've been talking with Jason Lipschutz of Billboard.com. Go to soundcheck.org. You can read his whole article about 50 forgotten gems from the Now series. Jason, this has been fun. Thanks.
Thank you so much, John.
Up next, the duo Why Oak takes its name from a beloved 450-year-old tree in Maryland that sadly succumbed to a thunderstorm in 2002. But the band Why Oak is still standing, and we'll hear them play live in our studio next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's not that unusual for bands to find inspiration in the long-ago music of their childhoods, but in the band Why Oak's case, that music that they grew up with wasn't so long ago. It was the music of the 90s. The duo's recently released fourth album, called Shriek, signifies a big shift in the band's sound from their previous guitar-heavy tracks to something a bit more synthetic. It's a sound we're going to get to hear right now, live in the studio, with Why Oak and a song called Before, live on Soundcheck. That is the band Why Oak, live on Soundcheck with a song called Before, which you will find on their latest album called Shriek. Why Oak is, as it has always been, Jen Wassner and Andy Stack joining me here at the microphones. Jen, good to see you again.
Hi, good to be here. Thanks for having us.
So it has been you on voice and guitar and Andy on drums and keyboards, but now you both have keyboards, and you were playing bass on that song.
I was, and yes, we do. I think it feels a little bit more natural for us than maybe it looks to some people because, at least in the studio, you know, we're a two-person band, so we've always shared instrumental duties pretty equally.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're making records, it's not uncommon for me to be playing keyboards, to be playing bass, for Andy to be playing bass. There are guitar solos on our records that everyone thinks that I played, that Andy played.
Really?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's never really been.
And yet in live performance, that's you squalling away out on the middle in the middle of the stage.
Yeah.
It's always been sort of like being in the studio and like, you know, Jen will pick up the guitar and start playing, and I'll be like, no, don't do it that way, do it this way. And then I'll start playing, and then she'll be like, no, like play this way. And it just kind of goes back and forth. So, a lot of the record, all the records we've made, it's like, who did that again?
It's actually hard to remember what is what at a certain point. Yeah.
Well, now you've ditched the whole problem altogether because neither of you are playing guitar.
That's true. Yeah. I still play. It's funny. I still play a lot of guitar in our live shows because we don't have enough. I mean, it makes for some nice variety because, you know, all the old stuff and the new stuff, I think, mixes together pretty well. But at least in the new stuff.
Well, now, the last time we spoke, it was at Celebrate Brooklyn. You guys had just come off the stage.
I remember.
It was a great set. And you had just put the first kind of electronic synth-based song up online. And the initial response was horror from the fans who, you know, expected to hear guitar. And Jen, you had something really interesting to say about, you know, not being beholden to the expectations of your own fans.
Well, I think that, I mean, it's not just expectations of fans, it's also my own expectations about what this project was allowed to be, so-called allowed to be. And that was a big hang-up for me when I was trying to write new material. I just felt like that all these, I mean, when you start a band, you start any creative enterprise, freedom is such a big part of why people want or feel inspired to make art, you know? And so over the course of a few years, I mean, it's very flattering that people have become so attached to my guitar playing. And it's certainly not something that, you know.
Well, now we learn it was Andy's guitar
playing. Well, some of it, yeah. Finally, your credit is just, finally, the credit you've just been due. I think at the heart of it, I really had a lot of faith that people who liked our project were really in it for the songs themselves.
Right.
And it was never about the guitar for us. And it was also not like I was trying to make some sort of statement about the guitar. It's become this, you know, one of the talking points about the record. I play guitar almost every day. I still love the instrument. It was just a matter of having a hard time finding inspiration at that particular time in my life and needing to reclaim some of the freedom that I felt like I had lost with the project. And
so did the change of instruments change the songwriting, or did the songwriting suggest to you, hey, I need a different sound?
I think it was a little of both. I mean, the process was very different because of the different instrumentation, but also because of the fact that we were living in separate cities for the first time. So the recording, the production of the songs themselves actually was integrated into the writing process from the get-go.
So now you guys had both been in Baltimore.
We have, historically, right. But
now one of you has absconded to the West Coast.
Yeah. I was living in Portland, Oregon, for most of last year of 2013, and then I have relocated again. I live out of boxes a lot, apparently, but now I'm living in Texas, and I bought a house there. So
where in Texas?
In a real little town called Marfa, in West
Texas.
It's
not such a small town.
Oh, it's very small.
Very small.
maybe not by reputation, but
right. It has a big musical reputation.
Sure, yeah.
Too.
There's like one stop sign in the whole town. So.
Wow.
It's probably the smallest town you've ever heard of.
Yeah, that may well be true.
That's a good point. It's bigger than its bridges.
Actually, notably, KRTS, the NPR station there, is like the smallest listenership of any public radio station in the country.
So support now, because your call matters.
Yeah,
And Jen, you're still in Baltimore?
I'm still in Baltimore, yes.
We're speaking with the members of the band Y Oak. Their latest CD is called Shriek. So with the sounds of, I mean, we're hearing a lot of contemporary songwriters now looking back to the electronic music of the 80s and 90s. Who were you guys looking back to?
It's very interesting because I think I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, your record, it's so 80s," or like, or it's so 90s. To me, I wasn't necessarily fixating on anything like that. And a couple times when people have told me that it sounded futuristic, I was really stoked. Like someone told me it sounded like Blade Runner, and I didn't know.
Which would be 1980s.
Yeah, but they, I think what she meant, she said it sounds like the future as envisioned
right.
by. So I think it wasn't necessarily that we were trying to make a retro sounding record as much as it. I always struggle with the question of influences in general because I feel like the way that I write, particularly, is so instinct based. It's such an intuition based act that oftentimes, you know, it's all unconscious. It's obviously coming out of me. Everything that I've ever heard and loved and experienced is in there, and I'm sort of filtering what I do through it. But if I start to think of specifics in that process, then I lose it. So in the act of creating, I can't even think that way. Does that make sense?
Right.
You know,
it absolutely does. But the corollary to that, and I've heard a lot of people, you know, a lot of creative people say that, but then the corollary is that sometimes when you're done, you look at what you've created and you think, oh, I didn't know that was in there.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. That's true.
All right. You want to play another song?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Tower?
Yeah, we're going to play. Excuse us. We're going to go get back to our positions.
Okay. Y Oak going back to battle stations. Jen Wassner singing and playing keyboards and bass. Andy Stack playing the drums and more keyboards, one hand on the keys, one hand on the drumstick. The album is called Shriek. It includes this song, The Tower, but we're going to hear a live version of it today on Soundcheck. That is the band Why Oak, performing live here in the Soundcheck studio in a song called The Tower from their new album called Shriek. Jen Wassner, Andy Stack, great to see you guys again.
Thank you so much for having us.
Tomorrow on the show, picking a name might be the hardest thing a band has to do, but it's pretty important. The Vice music site Noisy recently compiled a list of how to ruin your band name. We'll dig in with editor Dan Ozzie. Plus, the latest album from singer-songwriter Gabriel Kahane has a track listing filled with street addresses from Los Angeles. We'll hear about a concept album that doubles as a sort of LA tour guide. And a reminder, Soundcheck is coming to BAM. Watch us record an upcoming episode of the show as part of Radio Love Fest with guests Hamilton Lighthouser of the Walkmen and the indie band San Fermin. We'll be live on stage at BAM's Harvey Theater on June 7th. For tickets, go to bam.org/radiolovefest. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.